Handicapping a session of the General Assembly is a lot like tending a long-standing perennial garden. Oh, sure, you know something is going to sprout each spring, but you can't be sure what. You might get some eye-catching peonies and fragrant daylilies, or, well, skunk cabbage. And then, just when you think you produced that perfect floral display, some invasive late bloomer threatens to overwhelm everything you've nurtured all season. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and this is Indiana Lawmakers, the state's longest-running public affairs program. Each week for the next 4 months or so, we'll dig into, and we hope help make sense of, the General Assembly's most significant proposals and debates. We'll get started in just a moment with several individuals known for wielding pretty big shovels, four of Indiana's most tenacious public affairs journalists. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researcher Phil Owens is creating new ways to map soil functions, improve plant growth, and increase crop yields, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
All right, as promised, it's time to get into the weeds, figuratively speaking, with four people who certainly know their way around Indiana's political and governmental landscape. I'm delighted to welcome former Indianapolis Star political reporter Mary Beth Schneider, now an editor with the State House File, Eric Berman, veteran political reporter for WIBC Radio here in Indianapolis, Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Brandon Smith, State House reporter for Indiana Public Media and host of Indiana Week in Review, which, as I like to say, airs on many of these same public broadcasting stations. Thank you for being here for the first show of the season and our inaugural use of this table, which now when we talk about a round table, we actually have, well,
a hexagon.
Some sort of table. Leave it to the journalists to always be sticklers for the truth. But thank you for being here. I know it's you're probably sleep-deprived and we haven't even gotten really started yet. But so we look at the agendas that have been put forth thus far. We have the governor's, which was critics said, oh, there's nothing in there of substance. It's all so tame. You know, he wants to combat infant mortality and he wants to deal with the opiate crisis and beef up education and workforce development, all while balancing the budget and keeping the surplus intact. Okay, all well and good. And, we, of course, the caucuses have come forth with, again, rather predictable agenda items as well. Have we seen the universe of the issues that are going to be dealt with? I mean, are all the cards on the table, so to speak, or are we just waiting for the real good, juicy stuff to flow here, Mary Beth, when the state of the state?
Yeah, all the cards are never always on the table. I think there's always a surprise, and the agendas usually are pretty predictable, I guess, is the safest word to say. They are they're all worthy, you know. A balanced budget. There are many states that would not be a given, and here it is, and that's
especially
a good
now
thing.
That it's a constitutional part of the Constitution,
yeah,
thanks to
but
the amendment.
I think
ratified.
When you really get into it, and often it's not when the bills are filed; it's when you start seeing amendments on the floor that you get the real surprises.
Okay, so what will? Does anyone disagree with that, or do we? Do you? Does everyone think that the real fun issues that will end up consuming a lot of the time have yet to be discussed or have not actually gotten a lot of attention yet?
I think some of the issues are already out there and are clearly going to be discussed, but there's always a surprise, as Mary Beth said, and even with the stuff we know is going to come up, there's still a lot of blanks that say to be filled in later. You know, but teacher pay is something that all four caucuses and the governor want. No one has put forth a plan yet. This is still very much a fill in the blanks there. We don't know how they propose to go about that. School safety is on everybody's agenda. Nobody's really been too specific about how to do that, although there's a 200-page report that they're going to be tracking pretty closely. There's a lot of gun bills out there on both sides of the issue. If those get a hearing, that's the kind of thing that could take center stage away from those agendas that you just outlined. So, yeah, the surprises are called surprises for a reason.
So in addition to truth, justice, and the American way, which I think we're on all of the agendas pretty much, you agree? I mean, is the key issue still lurking out there somewhere that will appear, say, halfway through the session, or at least?
Oh, something always pops up.
Oh, of course.
And that's
I think
the
we have consensus. See, this is what I love
covering
about
a legislature.
Group.
But, I mean, there are going to be some new discussions we haven't had before. The whole sports wagering debate will be new. And not just do we have sports wagering. I think everyone sort of is like, yeah, we're going to do that. But, you know, how we do it, how someone can they do it on their phone? Do they have to go to a casino? You know, what tax rate is it? Do we give money to the leagues of the professional sports? The little details of that will be very interesting to watch.
Similarly to that, you're talking about the idea of we have, in many cases, the big idea, but not the here's how we actually do it. The big idea that I think could occupy a lot of time and air at the State House is similarly in gaming, what to do with the second license up in Northwest Indiana. Do they just move it and keep it up in Northwest Indiana? Do they move it to another part of the state? And then if that happens, good heavens, that could derail a lot of other stuff. Or at least, I shouldn't say derail, but it'll occupy a lot of the attention and energy for a while at the State House.
Well, if we heed Woodward and Bernstein's call to follow the money, certainly watching that legislation would be critically important. And I wasn't going to get to gaming right away, but, you know, a couple of you mentioned it. It really, we're hearing talk that there might be a broad bill that has everything from, you know, charity gaming reform or cleanup, I guess, as they're saying it's revenue neutral, but just make it less confusing is what the head of the Indiana Gaming Commission has talked about.
Though. They've been tinkering on the edges with
the promotional play. You mentioned the licenses for the Majestic Star casinos in Buffington Harbor currently. Table games are always, and the taxation rate and so forth. Because we do see revenues. I mean, if you did a...
I don't think anybody expects those revenues to come back up, though.
No, but how do you stick a finger in the revenue loss dike? I mean, you look at the Four Winds Casino, a tribal casino, which opened, less past January, a year ago, basically right now, up in South Bend, which apparently you're seeing a dwindling of some of the revenues, and then the resulting tax revenues in some of those. So, I mean... Could this be the sleeper that it reminds me a little bit maybe of 1993, and I guess the hair gives it away. I do
well,
remember that.
What you're
that.
Talking about where, is they passed the riverboat and the, in the
it was more than special session. It was more than the 11th hour.
Right.
It would be like the 13th, 14th hour.
It was stuck in against over the objections of the governor at the time. And what Indiana has
all,
done.
With the argument that it was, we got to make
we've
this all
everything
to make the budgetary.
Piecemeal, though. We do a little bit here, a little bit there. We come up with rules one year, and this is the rule. It has to be on a navigable river. And then we chip away. So what we have is kind of a mess, and it wouldn't be a bad idea for them to come up with actually a long-term policy that's fair to all the region of the state, not just people with rivers, and figure out whether we are just all in or, frankly, cash out.
And will we see something like that have legs? No, we see a head shaking down here.
I mean,
you're
she's not no? wrong cleaning up a lot of that language. But the problem is, Brian Bosmer likes to talk about the levers of the gaming system. When you pull one, you have to make adjustments to another one. So, for example, if they move one of the licenses out of Northwest Indiana and put it in another part of the state, well, who is that going to impact? Because you assume you're not going to necessarily just draw out-of-state people who are new to gaming. So, if they put one, for example, in Terre Haute, which I still think is unlikely.
Or Indianapolis.
Then French Lick and the two Racinos are going to cry, you know, foul. And so will you have to have that casino, that new casino, being paying money to French Lick and the Racinos? How does that work? How much money? That sort of thing. So you do one thing, and you're going to have to do a bunch of others to help.
But in the meantime, you're looking at the adjacent states where more and more gaming opportunities have arisen. And again, I think you made the point, Brandon, that nobody's looking at this as the windfall that's going to solve our budgetary problems. But again, it's become an integral part of the state budget. I mean, it's really a matter of shoring up the funding at this point.
One argument against doing, and this is one that they would probably not even agree with, but doing it in the session is the wrong way to do big policy. They really should have it thought out, discussed, planned beforehand, come in with a bill at the beginning, and that isn't happening.
You love those interim study committees.
I've
heard.
Those are actually...
Yeah, I haven't heard any discussion of a overall comprehensive gambling reform.
Nor had we in 1993 before you were born.
Well,
I was born. But it, I mean, yes, there were bills, but the notion of having, you know, 11 casino licenses just kind of hatch I don't think that really came up until the final hours of that special session.
But the Gary delegation had been pushing for that for years,
sure,
and it became their leverage to get a budget through. You had divided government in 93. You've got unified Republican government this year. That none of this is to say that couldn't happen, but I certainly haven't seen that in the winds. And again, with that many gambling issues out there, sports gambling, again, is going to happen. And they have essentially done
you
the study
on that. You say it's
going to
happen. He just shook his head.
Oh, no, no.
No, it's going to happen.
Okay. Sports gambling
is happening.
Because it did pass unanimously out of your beloved interim
committee. I don't believe that, believe me.
Well, maybe not beloved, but you just touted the concept. So I guess now that we studied it, it came out unanimously.
I will say this. If you talk about the budgetary impact of gaming, there's not a lot of money to be had in sports wagering.
No.
But
even the casinos will tell you.
Yeah, the casinos are first to tell you that.
Of course they'll tell you that. They don't want a high tax rate.
Right. But I will say this. In a year when we might have a rather tight budget, where lawmakers are trying to find money for a lot of stuff and not a lot of money, that does make the prospect of a brand new casino somewhere in the state a little more likely than it would otherwise be, because any new casino is probably going to bring in more money. Even if you're shifting some money from other casinos, you're, depending on where you put it, you're probably going to generate more revenue than you otherwise would have.
Well, think about the racinos, if memory serves. When they first came into being in Shelbyville and Anderson, were there not some sizable...
Well, they had a massive licensing fee.
Yeah, the cost of admission there was pretty... I'm not talking about the cost of getting into the track. I'm talking about the cost of getting into
the business. License. Yeah.
And that was seen, I think... Nobody made any secret of the fact that that was a revenue play. So I guess when those licenses are maybe up for grabs or table games, maybe you can have satellite arrangements where you're moving some tables offsite. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but... It's interesting.
It's all up for conversation.
It does beg the question then, which, you know, the lawmakers are here ostensibly to pass a two-year state budget, which the question is, you can only tighten the belt so much, I would think. But where do you look for additional revenue? I mean, gaming may not be the panacea, but... And the governor has said no tolling of roads at this point for the foreseeable future, so you cross that off the list. You know, there's the group that, a very large coalition that's talked about putting a $2 a pack cigarette tax that would generate maybe $350 million, although primarily they would say for cessation efforts and health efforts, the general budget as a whole.
That's not ever going to all go to cessation. They would put it toward Medicaid, which would then free up other money.
My guess is it would never go anywhere anyway because... I shouldn't answer the question. I will pose the question. I mean, as you look, as 150 friends up the street, look for ways to generate additional revenue, is there any there in a proposal such as a cigarette tax increase?
Well, I think that will at least be definitely discussed, and that, and also the changing of the smoking age, because they can put some of that new money, if they raise the cigarette tax, to healthcare stuff, and then they can pull that other money out and maybe give it to education or something like that. So that is definitely something that will be in the budget discussion.
But that's also
I'm sorry, does anybody actually think, though, that I mean, we still have the ghost of Grover Norquist, and no new tax plan. Well, I think he's alive. I shouldn't say his ghost. But the specter overlooking those who have signed a pledge in the past, and those numbers are dwindling, I guess, because of turnover and churn. But, I mean, is there an appetite for that in this session?
They've passed it before. The House has passed that in two consecutive years. The fascinating thing about this debate to me is no one's saying no. You know, in the years when the House passed it, the Senate said, yeah, that's not something we're interested in. The Senate's not saying that. They're not endorsing it either. Everyone on both the House and the Senate side, and the governor for that matter, is saying, well, that's something that we'll have to look at. No one is ruling it out. I do think if they pass that, it's more likely to be billed as a health measure rather than a revenue measure. It's going to be a short-term revenue measure, and that might be part of the calculus.
By definition, because if it's effective and it works as proposed, you would see diminished returns.
Yeah, and that's been an argument that its opponents have made in the past. Look, this isn't going to bring in the money you think it is. The advocates, the Raise It for Health Coalition, the hospitals and the chamber and so forth, are saying, yes, we know. It is going to raise less money. That's the point.
Right.
Well, some mention the money, but you're right. For them, it's more of a workplace health issue, and they say there's a B attached to the fiscal impact. They would say in terms of health insurance and lost time for workers who are afflicted with maybe smoking-related diseases and so forth. Okay, so we still don't have an answer to how we're going to solve this budgetary conundrum.
Well, I will point out the Democrats have an answer, and their answer is to stop reducing the corporate tax.
These are the business benefits which are designed to make Indiana
attractive. I think we have several more years that's still going down. And when we saw the revenue forecast a couple of weeks ago, it was interesting. In the second year of that revenue forecast, we had zero growth of corporate tax. So, I mean, that is hitting...
That's the third largest
defining moment on whether we need to keep going down on that. So that discussion, I think, is getting a little more.
Well, and let's catch people up who maybe haven't been following this. $800 plus million in additional funds. That was what we saw in the revenue forecast that you're referring to last month, which on the surface sounds great until we think about the child services increase, which they apparently are going to get what they needed this biennium, $286 million.
That remains to be seen.
A year.
Yeah.
Well, that was the
tale of 2 weeks. It was one week in December, DCS came out with their budget request, which was $286 million more a year than they spent in the last budget, got in the last budget. But, yes, it brings it up to what they've been spending for the last year or so.
And this, of course, comes in the wake of the very controversial resignation of the former director of the agency who said that lives are at risk if things are not done to rectify some of the problems.
So 1 week in December, DCS says, this is what we need. And everybody goes, okay, you'll get it. And then the next week, we got a revenue forecast in which all of the new money is basically eaten up by DCS and Medicaid.
Which is also going up $120 million each year.
And so you had Republican leaders then go,
The very next day, they were sitting down with DCS in private meetings to discuss whether they could trim back there. So we will see, I guess, when the governor produces his own budget here
next
in a few weeks.
Don't you think that's the new third rail? Forget Social Security. You, if somebody messes with this funding in the wake of the crisis where the alarm bells were sounded about the threat to young people and children in need, what if somebody, heaven forbid, something happens, and does anybody want the political black eye that comes with saying, you cut it. This is what we needed. This is what the consultants... and adhering to the consultants' recommendations when we were trying to clean up this situation, and we had to tighten it a little bit, and then somebody dies. How do you respond to that?
But it has been Republican orthodoxy that you do not throw money at a problem, that you need to find more efficient ways to doing it. And you're hearing those stories. You're hearing that out of DCS, that we have changed some of our habits. We don't automatically pull a child out because that was very expensive and not always getting the result that you wanted to help the child. So they're working more on keeping the families together.
Poverty used to be part of the definition.
And just other ways.
And I neglect think in any classic sense, perhaps.
I think you'll hear more of that, that they will decide, okay, we don't necessarily, because we're already learning how to do some of this stuff better for less, and a Republican legislature is primed to accept that.
I'll say this, though. I would be surprised if after all these conversations that will mostly happen behind closed doors, if after all of that, as we're getting closer to the end of session, if the governor and DCS say, no, this is the number we need, I would be surprised if Republicans in the legislature don't go, fine, here it is. Because then you run into that problem of, if something happens, DCS and the governor can say, well, we told you what we needed and you didn't give it to us. It's your fault these kids died.
Well, if additional money
of some
sort is freed up.
The only way it works is that if everybody's on the same page, we don't actually need $286 million. It's $255 million because we found efficiencies and more effective ways to use that money. I think that's the only way that works, because otherwise, then you have the problem.
Well, if additional money is found,
it's going to be like $255. It'll be something close to $286.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a rounding issue.
Going down very much.
No. If money is freed up in some fashion, where does it go? Does it go to teacher pay increases, which, of course, is a challenge in and of itself, because we don't, unlike other states, which do it by, fiat at the state level, that's not the way it's done here. It's done at the local level, often through collective bargaining. So just because you allocate money for raises doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a teacher raise. Or does it go to school safety funding? You know, we We've had some, since the last time lawmakers met, we've had some shootings, very high-profile shootings here in the state, Noblesville, Richmond. Some people want to see money increased in that regard. So if in fact, a few dollars are freed up, what's going to be... What's the pecking order, do you think, of where this money's going to go? Aside from
education,
what we'll stipulate,
is always
Medicaid
the
increase, which is really built in.
Yeah, basic education tuition support is always the top.
Which is what the governor said initially before, which sort of then it became, well, maybe teacher increases. Initially he talked about your favorite thing. Well, I know, I'm not going to attribute it to, but a study committee or some sort of I think you get paid extra for summer overtime. I think that's what this is all about. But, of course, he seems to have talked about changing plot line. I mean, now that seems the four-year evaluation seems to have
Think it's that. I think they haven't done a very good job of messaging this yet.
No.
But I think if you look at what everybody
is
saying...
You mean because they all disagree even though they're from the same party?
You can't tell what they actually want. That's the problem.
I get the sense that what they're talking about is in this budget, they're not going to give money specifically to schools and say you have to use this for teacher pay. I think they are trying to do that two-year study to figure out a sort of funding structure where schools don't have to make the choice, okay, do I keep the lights on or do I give my teachers an increase? Because that's the choice they're going to get in this budget. Yes, they will probably increase education funding.
But, 1-2%.
But yeah, I don't see it going well above inflation increase.
Right.
And what that leaves out again would be school safety issues. I mean, there already is a lot of money, but I'm talking about an increase.
I think they'll find that.
Or how about pre-K, expanding the pilot program?
That's not even up for discussion.
Well, you have some people who certainly want to see that in some of the caucuses,
not
necessarily
the
Supreme Court.
I don't think they're in the majority.
So we'll stick for the time being with the 3,000 kids in 20 counties as part of
the
pilot program.
Well, the administration is spinning that with the current level of funding, they can actually increase the number of kids or counties in the program by finding more efficient ways to get people enrolled and all that. But that's a small increase if there's one at all.
The word of the day is efficiencies. Okay, we've got that several times.
Indiana.
That is Indiana. That is the way these things work. So we have some debate over what is going to happen. Maybe it's easier to discuss what probably won't happen because of the budgetary issues. And I have my little list I scribbled here, if I can read it without my glasses. Medical marijuana passage. We'll take them one at a time. Are we going to have anybody think that this is the year for medical marijuana?
Nope.
I think it's unfortunate, but no. And it's not a money issue.
In this case, it could be. But the governor has said, and I think Republican leadership has said, that until it's not a federal crime, there's no in this legislation. So that kills that effect.
Yeah, I mean,
too much opposition
in
too many high places, starting with the governor.
I wouldn't be shocked though if we get some sort of discussion of it, and by the way of a formal hearing. I don't think we'll see a committee vote on it. I would be really stunned if that happened. But I wouldn't be shocked if they at least give the people who are pushing it, because some of the people who are pushing this are traditional Republican supporters. When you see a lot of, like, for instance, veterans groups coming out and pushing
the American Legion a few years
ago. So I wouldn't be stunned if we get some sort of formal hearing in one or the other chamber just to say, okay, listen, we talked about it, but we're definitely not doing it.
All right. How about redistricting reform? I mean, all right. You've spoken eloquently with your laughter. Okay, so gerrymandering is alive and well, and the people in power will continue to draw the
maps. They love it. It got them the numbers they have today.
Okay. Now, some Democrats have made noise about trying to impeach or remove in some fashion, I guess impeachment is the term, Curtis Hill, the embattled attorney general, who, of course, was accused of perhaps misconduct at the end of session party last year with a Democratic lawmaker and three staffers.
And some lobbyists, as we learned.
And some lobbyists. But, of course, you had a special prosecutor look at this and said it didn't rise to the level of prosecution, although I think the word was creepy.
I think what he said was it wouldn't be worth the taxpayers' money to prosecute this because he thought he would have a hard time proving what he needed to prove the way the law is written in Indiana.
Well,
am I right that this is the
amount of time we've spent on this discussion is probably all it deserves, because the Democrats who are in minorities, there's a supermajority now for the seventh year and a Republican supermajority in the House and Senate, and they effectively have said they don't want to deal with this. So that
yeah. it, does deserve more discussion than this, and it does, but it's not going to get it, and that's the problem. But there is real, you know, real problems that women face, and the biggest problem is that so often it's down to, well, we can't really do anything about it. And they will not change the law. They will not address it. They're not going to impeach him. It'll be a political issue for the AG's race the next time he's up. But that's it.
Well, there is a bill, though, that would enhance, that would actually make this a penalty. Is that not the case?
Well, I've seen one bill.
Class A infraction?
Yeah, there will definitely be some bill for that. I've also seen Cherish Pryor, who wrote the amendment that became the bill last year for sexual harassment training for lawmakers, has now also written a bill that would be sexual harassment training for all of the statewide office holders, so Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, Superintendent of Public Instruction, and Attorney General. So I could see them doing that as a sort of, well, see, we did something.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing, although, as Mary Beth points out, there's a lot further they could go.
Yeah.
And I agree. I don't see that happening.
I think what Brandon said on marijuana is likely to be how the Curtis Hill thing plays out. There will be a discussion. There will be a day where probably the formative amendment, it gets debated on the floor, but there's not going to be a full impeachment. I'd be very surprised.
All right. And we're almost out of time, but bias crimes. That seems to be shaping up to be a real Donnybrook. You have the governor putting apparently some significant amount of political capital behind this measure to bring Indiana in alignment with, what, 45 other states who have some form of bias crime legislation. And the real sticking point here seems to be whether or not to include gender identity. The governor has said yes. A lot of the business community, corporate community that's concerned about the state's image says yes. You have fairly vocal opposition within the governor's party. How does that play out?
I think he's going to have to be much stronger than he has been already on this and be specific about what he wants. And my fear of this whole debate is that it will be done behind closed doors with the public not really involved because they don't want another RFRA.
If you talk to supporters of the bias crimes, they say you're only going to get a RFRA, another RFRA, if you leave gender identity out. That will generate the kind of negative attention the state doesn't want.
Well, it's not starting out well, I have to be honest, because, you know, the new Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray announced that he's going to put it in rules, and even though he said it's not to kill it, you know, obviously people have an indication of what rules
is. That is a place where things tend to go for...
But to me, I just don't understand why we're treating it differently than another bill. Send it to the right committee, have a full discussion, vote on it. That is what citizens want. Whether it goes up or down, at least deal with it.
All right. I was going to give you the last word, but you're going to have. We'll save it for the internet special that people can tune in to. Thank you again for a lively discussion and I think an important discussion as we begin this session. Again, my guests have been Mary Beth Schneider of the State House File, Eric Berman of WIBC Radio, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Media. Redistricting marijuana bias crimes. A lot's going on this legislative session, or not. We'll talk to the four caucus leaders on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Chuanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue startup NeuroVigor, renewing hope for people with chronic diseases like MS and Parkinson's by targeting neurotoxins, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.